Hello and welcome to Through the Bible with Les Feldick, an inspirational and informative half hour of insight into the heart of Scripture. In addition to teaching the Bible, Les is a full-time rancher, having a down-to-earth practical teaching style that makes the Bible come to life. All programs are available on audio tape, videotape, and in printed form. At the end of the program, there will be an address where you can contact the ministry. And now, here's Les Feldick with today's lesson.
And he, this man of sin, this Antichrist, shall confirm or make the covenant with many, the nation of Israel, for 1 week. Now remember, going back almost 7-8 weeks now, that Daniel's prophecy was a 490-year period of time, going all the way back to Nehemiah's return to Jerusalem to rebuild the city walls. You remember that? And 483 of those years were fulfilled just before the crucifixion, probably on Palm Sunday. And then according to the Old Testament prophetic program, even though there might have been a small interval of time between the death, burial, and resurrection, and the ushering in of this final 7 years to complete the 490. And we've been trying to show that nothing in the Old Testament indicated that that would be split open and stretched out over almost 2,000 years before the final seven happened. But they are going to still be fulfilled. And so this is the triggering mechanism then that kicks God's time clock back in gear. Now, you want to remember, when those 483 years were completed and Israel rejected the king and the kingdom, God put his whole program on hold. His time clock stopped, and it hasn't run now for the last 1,900 and some years. But as soon as this individual signs a 7-year treaty with Israel, then you're going to have 7 literal years unfold, and then Christ returns. So the language, I think, is plain enough that then in the middle of the week, or in the middle of that 7 years, he is going to cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. In other words, the temple worship to stop. Now, in order for the temple worship to stop, it has to be in operation. So we gather from this that Israel is going to rebuild her temple. She's going to have it. Now, whether she'll have it the whole 3.5 years, that's beside the point. It's going to be operating by the midpoint of this 7 years. Now, this is one reason I think that, as I mentioned last program, I think the Antichrist will be an apostate Jew, is because when this fellow signs this 7-year treaty with Israel, they are going to be so enraptured with this fellow that is promising them the peace and the prosperity they've been looking for. He's going to guarantee their borders against any of their enemies, and he's going to give them permission for temple worship. Hey, this is everything they're dreaming of. And as I've referred to so many times the last several weeks, when you read little comments from some of the rabbis in the Jerusalem Post, hey, the Messiah that they're looking for is the perfect description of the man of sin. They're looking for a man who will rule the world in peace. They're looking for a man who will elevate Israel to the epitome of all the nations, but that all the nations would enjoy the peace that could flow from their Messiah and ruling the nation of Israel. That's what they're looking for. So this guy is going to come on the scene, sign this 7-year treaty, and the Jews are going to think that they've finally arrived. They no longer have to maintain that tremendous military machine. They can lower their taxes. They can have a prosperity of domestic production and what have you. But this verse says that in the middle of the week, he's going to cause all of that to stop. He's going to turn on the Jew, and he will usher in then that final 3.5 years. Now, I've put my timeline back on the board for just predominantly the tribulation. After the departing, which we talked about last week from 2 Thessalonians, after the departing, then shall that wicked one be revealed. He's going to sign the 7-year treaty with Israel. But in the middle of that 7 years, he's going to go down to Jerusalem, probably from his headquarters in Europe, move into the temple complex, set up his headquarters, defile the temple, and force the Jew to worship him as God. It's going to be Hitler's Nazism all over again, only 1,000 times worse. Now then, go on to Matthew 24 again, where we'll pick up where the God of creation, and I think if I've emphasized anything over the last 2.5 years now of teaching on television, is that Christ is the Creator God of the universe. He is the very author of this book, and he himself refers then to this verse we just read in Daniel. When he says in verse 15, when you see these things, and this is where we closed again last week. I've been hitting this for several times over the last few weeks for emphasis. And again he says, when you therefore see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, that is in Jerusalem, in the temple. Whoso readeth, let him understand. Now, get the setting again. This is Jesus in his earthly ministry. He's talking to the 12, and he's talking as if it's going to happen in their lifetime. He gives no indication that there's going to be a big time span in between all this. He's talking to them as if they should be ready for it. Now, this is in accord with all of Scripture until you get to the Apostle Paul. Then all of a sudden we realize that instead of Israel going out to the nations with the gospel, what does God tell Ananias in Acts chapter 9? Don't be afraid of old Saul of Tarsus coming into your home because, now I'm paraphrasing, because I have commissioned him to be the apostle of the Gentiles. See what a difference that makes? But Jesus isn't speaking that way. He's speaking as if all these things are about to happen. Now I'll read on. Verse 16. Then. Now I always like to emphasize time words. Until is a time word. Then is a time word. And now he says then. At that point in time when the Antichrist comes in and defiles the temple and causes the Jews to stop their worship of their Old Testament system, then he says, let them who be in Judea flee to the mountains. Flee to the mountains. Now keep that in your computer up here. We're going to refer back to it in a little bit. Now verse 17. Let him who is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Now there's been a lot of talk about the remnant Jew in the tribulation. Some think it's the 144,000, but it's amazing that of all the reading I've done concerning the remnant of Jews who will be saved during the tribulation, nobody, I feel, explains this portion of Scripture. Now look at this portion of Scripture. This is not 144,000 young Jewish men, which Revelation says they will be. This is an admixture of a whole society. Now look at them as we come down through them. Let him who is on the housetop not come down. Now if you know anything about Middle Eastern lifestyle, folk who had retired and were living in a nice, comfortable retirement situation, their patio wasn't out the back door, but where? Up on the rooftop. And so Jesus is referring to people who were probably quite well-to-do, who were no longer in the mainstream workforce, but they were now enjoying a life of relative ease on their patio, on the rooftop. Now he says to that remnant of Jews who are going to be in this exodus out of Jerusalem, to this particular bunch, he said, don't you bother to stop and take your clothes out of the closet. Well, now, just be sensible. Just be logical. What class of people are going to be more concerned about the clothes in their closet than they are about getting out of a place of danger? Well, the wealthy, the well-to-do, they may have some expensive dresses and suits and so forth. Boy, I can't leave them behind. And so Jesus said, if you're in that category, don't you take time for it. because time is going to be of the essence. All right, that's one class of people. Now move down. Verse 18, neither let him who is in the field return back to take his clothes. Now what class of people we talked about? Working people. Probably the younger people between 25 and whatever who are still out there working every day. They're doing the common everyday tasks of life. And to that class of people, he says, don't you turn back to take anything out of your house or your clothes. Wherever you happen to be working, when you hear that the temple has been defiled, he says, you move out to the mountains if you want to escape. Verse 19. Woe unto them that are with child. Now, what age level are we talking about? Probably young mothers in their 20s and early 30s, normally. And he says to that group of people, young mothers, it's going to be tough for them. See? Woe unto them that are with child. In other words, they're heavy with child, and they're going to have to walk a long ways. But he's including them in that escaping remnant. And to them that are nursing. Now what have you got? Well, young mothers who are still nursing their children. Now, you see the cross-section of society that we're coming up with? We've got the older, retired, more well-to-do people. You got the working-class people. We got the young marrieds with their kids. A whole cross-section from top to bottom. Men and women, boys and girls. Verse 20. Jesus says, pray that your flight will not be in the winter, nor on the Sabbath. Now, you see what that shows? Since the temple has been operating for this first 3.5 years, the Jews are going to be aware of what concerning the Sabbath day? Law and how far they can walk without breaking it. And they're going to be so aware of the law that Jesus said if it's on the Sabbath day, most of you won't even dare walk more than that, what was it, 4,000 feet or something like that, that they could walk on a Sabbath day? It wouldn't even be a mile. They wouldn't get out of town. And then he says, hope that it's not in the wintertime because they're going to be walking, they're going to be carrying their goods, and he said, just hope that it isn't a miserable flight. Now, verse 21, for then, when the Antichrist comes in and defiles the temple, when he turns on the children of Israel or the Jew, and there's that exodus. Now, let me do it this way. Let's use our timeline in a twofold way. The Antichrist is going to come in, I think, from Europe, from the West. He's going to go down into Jerusalem. He's going to go into the temple, defile it, and immediately he's going to turn on the Jew. Now we're going to go to Revelation, and we're going to find that there's going to be another triggering mechanism that is going to cause these Jews to go down to the mountains, which, of course, are to the southwest, predominantly, of Jerusalem. And I call this the escaping remnant. It's not the whole nation, but it's going to be a remnant of Jews of all, like we just seen, from every category of life, and they're going to flee the area of Jerusalem down to the mountains, whether it's the city of Petra or what, I do not know, it's possible. But we know they're going to flee to the mountains. And there God is going to watch over them and protect them for that whole 3.5 years. Now, let's go back, if you will, now. No, let's read one more verse before we leave Matthew 24. Verse 21 again. For then, beginning with this midpoint, shall be great tribulation. Now, the tribulation, as we normally think of it, will start here. The whole 7 years is going to be tribulation, and I'll show you some things probably the next program that are going to make this 3.5 years anything but a Sunday school picnic. But here is where things really get tough. And I think we mentioned at the end of our last program, when you not only have the outpouring of Satan's wrath, but the outpouring of God's wrath on the whole human race. And it's going to be mind-boggling of what this planet will go through. All right, read verse 21 again then. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, nor ever will be. Now stop and think. Number one, those of you who heard me teach the flood, was that an enjoyable experience? It was awful. It was awful. It was climatic. It was cataclysmic. It was the end of everybody that was living at that time except Noah and his family. Then you come up through history. My, I've said the more you read history, the more you realize that for 90, 95% of the world's population, life was not life, it was an existence. It was a life of slavery. It was a life of just barely existing. And then you come up to the World War II and the slaughter of not just the Jews. My, there was a slaughter of Russians, Germans. Millions came under the suffering of World War II. But Jesus said, that's nothing compared to what is yet coming on this planet. And so he says, except those days should be shortened. Now, I know a lot of people get the idea. This means instead of running 7 years, it may run 6.5. Now, I think the Greek implies that unless it would end on schedule, it's going to go the full 7 years. But if it would go a week over or a month over, no one would survive. But since it will end on schedule, yes, there will be survivors. We have to have survivors because, after all, you've got to have people going into the kingdom. Now, of course, the largest group of survivors will be this escaping remnant of Israel. Now, then, let's go back to Revelation again. And let's pick up this escaping remnant in the prophetic book, Revelation. And I'd like to stop at chapter 11 first. Revelation, chapter 11. And here again, symbolism. Symbolism comes in so clearly, and all we have to do is decipher it, and all of a sudden the symbolism becomes a literal truth. Just as literal as if it had been written out in plain English again. Chapter 11, Revelation. Oh, let's see. We got to go back all the way to verse 3. Where we have, at the very onset of the 7 years, as soon as Israel signs that treaty with Israel, I think God is going to send the two witnesses to Jerusalem. The two Jews who are going to proclaim salvation to the nation of Israel right at the beginning. And I think it'll be out of their ministry that the 144,000 will be sealed and designated and sent out into the world to again proclaim the gospel of the kingdom. The king is coming. He's going to set up his kingdom. Well, anyway, in order to pick up the time factor, verse 3, I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days. Now, real fast-like, how long is that? 3.5 years. 3.5 years. All right. Now, we'll pick them up in verse... Oh, they're going to be put to death, you know, and so forth. But we'll come to that later. But anyway, at the end of the 3.5 years, verse 12, they heard a great voice from heaven saying unto them, come up hither. In other words, they've been killed. The whole world is going to see their bodies laying on the streets of Jerusalem. Now, remember before the advent of television and Telstar, those of us who are old enough, we can remember hearing sermons on this and reading this. We'd say, How in the world will everybody on earth see those two dead bodies laying on the streets of Jerusalem? I mean, it was a big hang-up. But here we are. Satellite technology and the streets of Jerusalem are in our living room just as plain, and every household will see those two Jews laying on the streets of Jerusalem, I suppose, to rot in that hot mid-east sun, and then... After they've laid there for 3 days, they stand up on their feet. God calls them back to life, and he calls them back to heaven, much the same as Elijah and, as Christ's own ascension, I guess we could equate it. And so they heard a great voice from heaven saying unto them, come up hither. And they ascended up into heaven. Now, this is the miraculous again, you know. As I've said, as soon as God starts dealing with Israel, the supernatural comes in and becomes almost every day. So they ascend up to heaven in a cloud, and their enemies beheld them. Now, I don't know whether they're going to have it on the 5:30 news going up, but it wouldn't surprise me. This is going to be world news. Now, verse 13. This is what I really wanted to come to. And the same hour. Where are we in the tribulation? Midpoint. And the same hour there was a great earthquake, that is, in the area of Jerusalem. And the tenth part of the city fell, and in the earthquake were slain of men 7,000, and the, what's your next word?
Remnant.
Remnant. See? And the remnant were affrighted, and they gave glory to the God of heaven. Now be careful. Is there salvation in merely ascribing glory to the God of heaven? Well, I know a lot of people do that constantly. And so these Jews, even though they recognize now that the God of Abraham, the God of heaven, is certainly working in their midst, it's not a salvation experience. But because of their physical fear of what has just taken place, what are they going to do? Well, what refugees have always done, they leave the city. And so they're fleeing for their life. Not all, a remnant. Now come over to chapter 12. Now chapter 12. When I start these half hours, I think I'm not going to have enough to fill the half hour, and then all of a sudden it's gone and I'm not through. But now in chapter 12, verse 5 and 6. Now here in the symbolism again, the woman is the nation of Israel. I think almost people are agreed to that. And so this woman brought forth a man-child. In other words, the Christ child. And here we leap the ages from the time of his birth to the rule of his kingdom, 2,000 years or more. And so she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. Now it backs up again to the ascension. And her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. Now he's ascended. Now verse 6. Now we leap back again to the midpoint of the tribulation. And the woman fled into the wilderness, that is the mountains that Jesus spoke of, where she has a place prepared of God, that they, the Godhead, the triune, that they, the Godhead, should feed her there. And again, what's the number? 1,260 days or 3.5 years. The last 3.5 years. Now, come across in that same chapter then, verse 13. When the dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman, that is, the nation of Israel. Verse 14. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, down to the mountains, to her place prepared of God. And she's going to be there a time, 1 year, times 2 year, and a half a time, 3.5 years, from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. And the earth helped the woman, opened her mouth, and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. Now then, come back with me very, very quickly to Exodus chapter 19. And I don't know if I'm going to have time to finish it, but let's hope so. Exodus 19. Because I've said over the months that we've been on the air now, and those of you who have been under my class teaching for a long time, so much of what takes place in Genesis and Exodus, we see a repetition in Revelation. Well, this is exactly what you have. The same setting of Exodus with Israel fleeing out of Egypt, with the Egyptian armies behind them. Now look how God looked at it. Exodus chapter 19, verse 4. And he says through Moses, "You have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself." You see what it says? Now I'll flip back again real quickly to Revelation, verse 14. And the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness. Now, put all this together. What happened back there when Israel was escaping? Oh, Pharaoh sent his armies and his chariots out to destroy them. Where did God stop Pharaoh? At the Red Sea. The Antichrist is going to do the same thing. He's going to send an army after these escaping Jews as they are being hurried along by the escaping power of God. But what's going to happen? They'll be destroyed.
Thank you for joining us again for Through the Bible with Les Feldick. If you'd like to order audio tapes, videos, or any of our printed material, you may do so by writing Les Feldick Ministries, Route 1, Box 760, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. That's Les Feldick Ministries, Route 1, Box 760, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. Or you can call us toll-free if you'd like at 1-800-369-7856. That's 1-800-369-7856. Remember, this is a faith ministry, and your participation with us is greatly appreciated. Again, our address is Les Feldick Ministries, Route 1, Box 760, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. And our phone is 1-800-369-7856. Thanks again for listening, and please join us next time for Through the Bible with Les Feldick.